Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'm so excited about this show. It's one of my favorite topics. It's about shamanism. And I'll be interviewing a book called The Norse Shaman. And it's really a history of shamanism dating way, way back to the very early days of hunters and gatherers. And as they came forward, and so many of the artifacts that they left that help us understand the history of shamanism. And it was such a pleasure to read, and there's so much more to this book that you'll hear about in the show. So to help us get along with this is the author of The Norse Shaman, Evelyn Rizdik. Evelyn, welcome.
Hi there. I want to correct you. My last name is pronounced Rizdik.
Oh, okay.
It's one of those names everybody gets wrong.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, there's so much in your book that relates to using the language of the ancient Norse that uses their spelling and their alphabet. So throughout the book, it was exciting for me to try to figure out how to pronounce things. So thank you for the correction. So this is really something, and it's amazing that you wrote a book that has so much information in it, and every chapter has really appealing knowledge. And so what it's about is why shamanism is such a deep part of us, and how the ancient shamans actually can still help us, right?
Yes, absolutely. And to support us to remember our connections to all that is. I think one of the greatest failings we have in Western society is our profound disconnection. We're disconnected from ourselves, from each other, from the natural world, and unfortunately our actions betray that fact. Or if we really understood we were connected, we would behave very differently.
And the opportunity is to do what you might call in the book an utaseta, which is a shamanistic journey. And I've had them, and I've loved the experience of that reconnection with nature, with the animal world, with the elements. And through a shamanistic journey, you actually have that direct experience, which in your book you show that's how the ancient people guided themselves.
Yes, absolutely. And truly, connectedness really is our natural state. We were hunter-gatherers for far longer than we've had any other form of society, and hunter-gatherers really have to depend on every member of the community in order to survive. And so we also had to be intimately connected and aware of our surroundings, when plants were ready to harvest, when the game would migrate through. So we had a much closer relationship with all the beings that we are surrounded by, and getting back into that requires us to step out of our ordinary mind. You know, we have a very well-developed left hemisphere of our brain, and that part is, I like to think of that as our most civilized part, but civilization is a double-edged sword. It can produce anxiety and depression just as well as perhaps a better food supply than our hunter-gatherer ancestors had. And so
right.
Step out of the left hemisphere's way of perceiving the world and move into that expanded state of awareness where we can perceive our connectedness. We can perceive the way that we are more related to everything around us than we are separate.
But, you know, it's not a left-brain way of knowing. when you do a journey, you're really journeying into the aliveness, into the inner activity of nature so that you know it better.
I love that expression, going into the aliveness. That's so absolutely true. And it's really that expanding of consciousness is also a very ancient tool that we humans have done. Chilton Pierce says we are wired for transcendence, that idea that we have the capacity to expand beyond the limitations of our ordinary senses, to be able to perceive things that are equally as real but more difficult to perceive using ordinary methods. You know, we like to put a lot of stock in our senses, but our senses are incredibly limited, even though they are magnificent. I would not want to give up a one of them. But our eyesight, for instance, can only see visible light, where insects can see in ultraviolet, and every raptor and hawk can see into the infrared. The same thing is true with sound. We can only hear a very narrow band that is audible to human ears. Elephants and whales can hear below it, and even your dog can hear above it. So there, you know, we have, there's much more to reality, and we have come to rely and define reality by what our five senses tell us. But in truth, we exist with far more around us. And when we can tap into that wider awareness of the world, it does several things. One is the action of expanding consciousness actually improves our ability to synthesize information. It boosts our ability to be creative, to use our imagination also to solve problems. And it also can help boost your intelligence, so it allows you to access your intelligence in a very different way. So
right.
it's not so much a tool to, some people think that journeying and even meditation are ways to kind of escape reality. I like to think of it as a way to enhance my perspective of reality so that my choices can be better informed.
And that's so important, because science has been limited by its inability to see the big picture and is only relying on the five senses. And the choices that science makes have been very destructive to the earth. And if only scientists could also become shamans.
Well, I think probably quantum physicists probably are. You know, I think
we're
in an interesting juncture between Newtonian science and quantum science, and they do not fit together very well. But the non-tangible experience is much more readily explained using quantum theory than it is Newtonian physics. You know, there's the whole idea that particles are entangled, that we are interconnected in this web of the non-local field. There's so much being talked about in the new science, the new physics, that is actually far more like metaphysics than anything.
Right. I recently did a show with a theoretical physicist and about creation, and it was fascinating. And so working as a shaman, we actually get to explore these realms of quantum reality, because everything is science. Even shamanic journeys are scientific in ways that science hasn't discovered yet.
And
it's just
really
the quantum physics.
Excuse me, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, it's fine. It's just that it's quantum physics that science really can learn more about reality and life through, you know, understanding shamanism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And shamanism really was, I think, our earliest technology. We had to rely on other ways of perceiving, which at its basis, I think science is an entire discipline of observing the natural world and decoding it. And I think in its inception, shamanism and shamanic journeying were tools used in the same way. How can we broaden our perspective to be able to get what it is that we need for survival that is not readily available and or perceived through our ordinary senses. And so,
right. So we call on the first shaman. What's her name? Freya?
I think she goes by many names. You know, all across Siberia, even into southern Asia, they talk about the first shaman being female. And how I related that through the book is there's clearly been some kind of veneration of the female, and I believe because it's a veneration also of the earth. The understanding that our ancestors have had about the kind of holiness of our planet, the remarkable mystery that is how the earth works. You know, our science is picking it apart and telling us this, that, or the other thing. But it really is this remarkably sacred place. It provides everything that we need. Our bodies are made of her body. We breathe her air. You know, there's water flowing through our body just like it flows through rivers. There's so much that we have lost touch with that our ancestors really understood about the world. They understood that we came from her, we will return from her. Every aspect of our physical experience is really earth-based. And in a larger sense, of course, it's cosmos-based, since the earth doesn't live all by herself. But this idea that we have this original kind of mother that has somehow made life possible, that's a very hunter-gatherer kind of experience. There's a wonderful study that I cannot tell you the year, because I'm pulling this out of my memory, that they studied two tribes that lived very close to one another, and one was a hunter-gatherer tribe, and one was a rudimentary farming community. And what they discovered that the hunter-gatherer people were far less anxious, far less depressed, and their children were much healthier in terms of their resiliency. And if you think about the two life ways, a hunter-gatherer sees food and possibility all around them. They move through the environment, and nature is always providing an opportunity, whereas a farmer has to rely on the little plot of land they have and whether or not rain comes and sunlight comes just to this little piece of property. So there's far more anxiety in that life way than there was in hunter-gatherer times. The other interesting thing is they looked at the well-being of the children. When crops are good, a farm family's child would perhaps get more food, but they tend to have more insecurities because they're set down and left be while their parents are farming, whereas a hunter-gatherer band would pass the child from one to the other as they were moving through the landscape. So a child not only learned that nurturance was available not just from their parents but from everyone in the band, that food in that form of nurturance was available everywhere. And that's a very different perception than the kind of fear and scarcity mindset that we have developed in this society.
Right. So there's a lot to understand about how we can live more close to the movements and the patterns of life, because in those days, there were so many earth changes that the hunter-gatherers had to keep up with. The ice ages were encroaching and then receding, and their natural habitats were changing all the time so that they had to move with them. And once they could establish themselves in any one place, they became farmers. And that, as you say, that made it much more stressful. Even though there was stress in the earth changes, they were using their shamanistic knowledge to flow with it. And so we're trying to be more like that now in life, to trust and to see what's going on the planet and believe in it, like climate change. And there are so many climate change deniers. It's hard to believe. And so we need to be like the old hunter-gatherers in being able to adjust to climate change and to the earth and to make it a better earth again. And there are so many new farming practices, so much new information about how to reclaim land and diversify crops and do things that we have gotten away from.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Absolutely right about that. And, you know, there is a cautionary tale, certainly, in my using that data from our own collective past. We have had to adjust to tremendous climate change, and there was a lot lost, and there are traumas, I think, kind of ingrained in us as human beings from those traumas. And so we have an opportunity to not only readjust our relationship with the natural world, and also readjust our relationship to other people, other species. You know, we have an opportunity with the 2020 hindsight of seeing what happened to our ancestors as we face shifts in our climate now, that we can start to develop strategies to, first of all, ameliorate the severity of climate change, but also, how are we going to care for people who are displaced? How are we going to care for the environment so it doesn't degrade any further? How are we going to work with the earth for the benefit of all human beings and all other beings? Or are we going to continue to work against that environment?
I think we're going to have to work fast, though.
Oh, you're right.
To keep up with the changes. And so we don't know what the future is going to be. And maybe shamanic journeys can help us get closer to a reality that supports us. And your book is so full of shamanic journey support, of advice and experience on how to do our own journeys. And I love to see what the history of shamanism has taught us about how to do it right, how to have the right tools for shamanic journeys and how to work with groups and how to use sound and materials to empower us and also to work with power animals. It's so beautiful and really reconnects us in great ways. And your book is loaded with opportunities to have shamanic purposes in journeys and the questions to discover answers for, and you know what to ask, and even what to report back about, is wonderful. And it felt so good to read this book, and I felt so at home, just having the feel of how deep you work in shamanism with. I mean, what, you know, the depth of your experience and what you can offer us readers to experience it better.
Well, you know, at its foundation, shamanism and shamanic journeying is really an experiential thing. It's not something we talk so much about, but you have to be in it and experience it, because that's where the transformation happens. Because it's not just information we receive when we expand our awareness. We are changed by that experience. We are, it's like the expansion changes how our mind works, how our heart expands. There's a tremendous shift in the physical being as well as the emotional body. And, of course, you get information right, if you choose to do that as well. That transformation of the individual, I think, is part and parcel of shamanism.
We get to know ourselves in a much larger way.
Yes.
We see ourselves more as part of the flow.
Mm-hmm.
And we see our that reconnection. Not only, it's not just that it connects us, it becomes us.
Yes.
And that's the wonderful part of it. We get to know ourselves differently because we see ourselves as so much a part of nature,
mm-hmm.
and entwined with the life of the world around us in ways of the spirit, of entwined with the spirit of life around us. And I think that's one of the greatest joys and results of having shamanistic journeys.
Well, you know, things like saving the earth is a concept. But when you, in through journeys, have experience communicating with the features of the landscape, even right around your house, the stepping into the perception of how trees experience the world, journeying to meet with the consciousness that's in the birds that visit your yard, then your concept of what to save completely shifts. It's not this large abstract idea. It's, I have made contact, and these are no longer ifs. They are whos. And we tend to save those things that we feel kinship to. You know, there's this radiating kind of attention that we provide for things. We care for those things that are closest to us more strongly than those in the widening and widening circles. So the more of the world that we bring into that inner circle where we experience not only other people as whos rather than whats, but the features of the natural world, that you have a sense of the river is right near our house. We have a small river, and it has its own rhythms. It has its own experience of the land. We think of water traveling only in the channel of the river, but water travels from all around the landscape and then finally flows into the river. So there's this sense of the river being under the street here as well, because that water is flowing into the river. So there's this whole sense of aliveness and a sense of personality, not in an anthropocentric way, but that idea that we are connected to these beings. I have learned who that tree is. I have learned what the stones are around my yard have to say to me. I can communicate with the spirit of the river because I now feel a kinship with it. We make offerings at our little, it's just a tiny little river, but in the breakup of the ice, we always leave offerings and thank it for not overflowing its banks. And we do the same thing in preparation before it freezes and thank it for the work that it did for the summer, the people like to boat on it, and, you know, they kayak down the river and what have you. There are fishermen that are on it. And we offer our thanks for the fresh water, for all that. And then it freezes up and it's quiet over the winter. And so you have this whole rhythm that you develop, even though I live in suburbia. You know, I have developed through journeying a sense of connectedness, not only to a specific place, because we tend to identify with our houses, the man-made structures, but to an ecosystem. When I start to look at one thing and how it is connected to everything else around it, it changes my perspective.
Right. Everything holds information from the micro to the macro. And when you climb into this, you feel how informed everything is. Mm-hmm. The trees inform each other. The root system, the water that flows holds information. And everything is working together. And great knowledge and amazing knowledge that we're just starting to know on the scientific level, but on the shaman level, it's something that we can attune to very quickly. So it's so important to, you know, appreciate this the value of being in this consciousness and of trying to attain it and as much as we can to you know, read your book. You have so much experience in there that we can use to do our own shamanic journeys. We can, you know, find the sound equipment, you know, the drums or whatever we need to put us into the trance state that we can then follow through that, you know, dive into the world tree and let it guide us where we need to go for our own purposes.
Absolutely. And one journey, at least in my experience, tends to lead to a dozen more. I follow my curiosity. I go for an intention in a journey, And then I'm introduced to beings and concepts that I had never thought of, and that leads my curiosity in a new direction. So there's this idea of becoming re-educated in some ways. We have all of our school learning that we had, but then you can become re-educated, which is all the stuff that fell outside of the box of your original education. And then you can develop this sense of truly belonging here on the planet, truly belonging as a part of nature, and that everything else deserves a place as well.
It's great. And, you know, we're getting near the end of the show. And so, you know, I can't stress enough how alive your book is with experience and knowledge and understanding the rituals and the tools and even understanding our roles to play in it. The great power of the mother role, the goddess role in shamanism, and that's the source of shamanism, were the women who were relied on for it. And the men only came relatively later to it, but still the women really hold, you know, that great Mother Earth strength that is so valuable. And many of us men really attune to that and enjoy traveling in that world also. So you must have had...
And we need to bring a kind of balance back. I don't say that we need to become a matriarchy, but the idea that we gain the wisdom and the guidance of insight that both the feminine and the masculine have, that we learn to work together in a new way for the benefit of all beings.
Exactly. So I'm glad to bring the male element to it, the Odin energy. And it's thrilling to be able to participate that way. Mm-hmm. And in this system, in the Norse language, you're a side kona, and I'm a side meter. Is that how that's pronounced?
I think since Old Norse is really a dead language, I think when we do the best job that we can, that's really what matters. It's not
that's
so much
right.
the name, but what's in our heart.
Right. So Evelyn Rysdyk, again, how do you pronounce your last name?
I pronounce it Rysdyk.
Rysdyk, okay. Where can people go on the web?
You're welcome to go visit my website, which is Evelyn Rysdyk, and my name is written R, Y like in yellow, S like in Sam, D like in David, Y like in yellow, K, evelynrysdyk.com.
That's wonderful. Evelyn, thanks so much for being the guest on Energy Stew. It's great talking with you.
Oh, thanks so much, and I'd be more than happy to talk to you again. This was fun.
Oh, good. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver.org, or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you, and thank you so much for listening.